Findings include some wave damage to the top sides of the vessel. A number of watertight doors have been breached, causing water damage inside.
Assessing the damage on the drill rig Kulik. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 3rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an early morning apartment building fire in Anchorage leaves families without a home.
They did find some deceased pets, and they are doing an investigation as to the cause of the fire and a damage estimate to the building.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Two more assessment teams were put on the Shell drilling rig Kulik today to continue determining the extent of damage caused by its grounding on New Year's Eve near Kodiak Island. Meanwhile, the Coast Guard says it should be able to balance its role in the recovery efforts with its responsibility to assure safety in winter fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. KMXT's Jay Barrett has more.
Weather conditions around Sitka-Leedic Island improved enough that a Coast Guard helicopter was able to lower a five-person assessment team onto the deck of the grounded rig Kulik yesterday, and another 11 were transferred there today. The crew yesterday spent about 3 hours aboard the rig. Shell's Alaska Venture Operations Manager Sean Churchfield said the preliminary report from the crew showed a mostly intact interior, though some significant water damage.
The findings include some wave damage to the top sides of the vessel. A number of watertight doors have been breached, causing water damage inside. The team has secured some of those open hatches, and the emergency and service generators have been damaged.
The lack of onboard power could complicate the recovery operation and may require electrical generators be temporarily installed to assist the salvers. Smit Salvage is the company that will attempt to free the Kulik. Smit worked on the salvage of the Selandang IU after it broke up on Unalaska Island in 2004 and assisted in the Costa Concordia cruise ship salvage off the coast of Italy last year. Captain Paul Mailer, the federal on-scene coordinator, reiterated that it was too early to speculate on a time frame for getting the Kulik off the beach or even how that might be accomplished. He did say, however, the official investigation into the accident has begun.
Following a request I made, investigators are en route from the Coast Guard Center of Excellence in New Orleans to conduct a Coast Guard Maritime Marine Casualty investigation. I want to assure you these investigators are amongst the Coast Guard's finest. Understand we are still in an active response, but I've taken these steps to initiate a Coast Guard investigation, and results will be made public upon completion.
Meanwhile, winter fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea are getting underway, and Mailer says the Coast Guard can still provide law enforcement and search and rescue operations while responding to the Kulik grounding.
We have to maintain the Coast Guard, our assets for search and rescue and other needs. So it's a balance, and I will say it is definitely a heavy lift for our crews, but it is not beyond what we can do safely and what we can manage.
Stephen Russell of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation was on an overflight of the rig and found no indication of spilled fuel or affected wildlife.
We did not observe, on our flight anyway, any wildlife in that area at all. And then approximately 1 mile, 1.5 miles north of the platform, we got pretty close to the beach to try and identify anything that would give us any sign of environmental impact, whether that was debris from the platform, as the captain had spoken. We did see the lifeboats there. We did not see any other debris that we could identify back to the rig.
Russell said the lifeboats from the Kulik gave him a good idea of currents in the area and where any potential pollution might travel. As a precaution, however, Churchfield said oil spill response equipment is being moved out of storage in Seward and staged in Kodiak. The Unified Command is seeking permission from the village of Old Harbor, just 10 miles from the Kulik, to stage equipment there as well. In Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.
Environmental groups are calling on the Obama administration to stop issuing permits for all offshore drilling in Arctic waters. Shell has conducted some exploratory work in the Arctic already, and ConocoPhillips permits begin in 2013. Charles Clusen is with the Natural Resources Defense Council.
We have learned this week from the COIC the risks of Arctic exploration extend beyond the Arctic itself and all up and down the supply line. That also so happens to be the fragile Pacific coastline from Seattle to the top of the world. And if Shell, one of the most profitable companies on Earth, can buy its way to safety, if they can't, nobody can.
Clusen says it's too soon to determine whether it will bring suit against Shell for the Culloch's grounding. The NRDC will wait to see if any oil spills from the rig. Lois Epstein is the Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society. Epstein is an Alaska engineer who also serves on the Federal Ocean Energy Safety Advisory Committee. She says Shell's planned Arctic operations put too much of a burden on too small of a fleet.
The exploration plan needs to be reviewed at a minimum by the administration, because built into that plan was using the Culloch drilling rig as the emergency relief well drilling rig for the Noble Discoverer, which was going to operate in the Chukchi, and vice versa.
Epstein says it would be too difficult for Shell to replace the Culloch altogether, and it will be some time until the company knows the extent of the damage to it. Investigators are trying to figure out the cause of a fire that burned a 24-unit apartment building in Midtown Anchorage this morning. Officials say the building is uninhabitable and an investigation is underway. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Flames ripped through a 24-unit Midtown Anchorage apartment building this morning. Al Tamani, a spokesperson for the Anchorage Fire Department, says when crews arrived at the Calais Arms Apartments, they saw smoke and fire coming from the roof and from the third floor.
Units got here, saw fire, heavily involved on the roof. They did call for a second alarm with additional resources. Crews have been actively fighting the fire. We have approximately 25 pieces of apparatus here at this point.
Crews responded to 911 calls around 8:40 a.m. More than 60 firefighters fought the blaze. The fire was under control by around 10:30. Tamani says no one died, but two people were transported to a local hospital. No word yet on their condition. Several pets did die in the fire.
They went in and did a last check to make sure there weren't any hot spots or anything like that. They did find some deceased pets, and they are doing an investigation as to the cause of the fire and a damage estimate to the building. We don't have a time frame for that.
Two cars were also damaged in the blaze, and several surrounding buildings were evacuated. Those nearby residents have been allowed to return home. About 25 people from the burned apartment building were initially taken to a nearby church, but have relocated to the Spinard Recreation Center, where the Red Cross is assisting them. Don Brantley is the Emergency Programs Manager for the Office of Emergency Management with the Municipality of Anchorage. She's working with the Red Cross of Alaska to shelter those displaced by the fire.
There's only 8 families there as of about 1 o'clock this afternoon. We're not sure if that's going to increase or decrease as people come home from work or not.
Brantley says the best way to support people in the shelter is by giving directly to the Red Cross.
They are providing the individuals who have lost everything in this fire with a debit card to help replace clothing, to help cover costs of food. And so cash is always the best donation because it can be used for anything and anyone.
In addition, the Red Cross is taking donations of new blankets and pillows at the Spinard Recreation Center, where the victims of the fire are being sheltered. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Congressman Don Young on his 21st term and the current congressional rancor.
It reminds me of two bullies in the yard trying to beat up somebody on both sides, bully and bully. But in the meantime, the people, the American people, are getting hurt.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
A new report by independent oil industry analyst Richard Feinberg alleges mismanagement of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. It centers on recent years' incidents in which pigs, mechanical devices used to inspect and clean the inside of the pipeline, failed to show up where operators expected them. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Richard Feinberg has been analyzing pipeline operations for decades, so when something unusual happens, he takes note. His latest report cues on incidents in November 2010 and May of last year in which cleaning pigs went off track into non-mainline relief piping. Feinberg says the unpublicized incidents are serious.
If the pig gets lost in the line, the pig can do damage. These have gone into pressure relief system off of the Brooks Range and off of Thompson Pass. That's very serious for pipeline operations.
Alyeska is having to run more pigs to keep the pipeline clear of wax buildup caused by reduced oil throughput. Alyeska spokeswoman Michelle Egan says the Brooks Range and Thompson Pass pig incidents were very different. Egan says the November 2010 missing pig recovered at Pump Station 5 followed a shutdown prompted by a false spill report.
When we shut down immediately, we did not take time to consider where our pig was located because protecting the environment was the greater concern. Then when we restarted, the pressure change caused that pig to get pulled into the relief system. In the other event, the wax cloud pushed in front of the pig caused a pressure change, and that opened up our relief system, and the pig was drawn into the relief system instead of the pig trap where it should have gone.
Egan says any damage to the pipeline's pressure relief system did not affect Alyeska's ability to operate it. Joint Pipeline Office Bureau of Land Management Officer Ron Dunton also downplays the lost pig issue.
We were well aware of it. Alyeska informs us of an event like this immediately, but it did not rise to any stretch of the imagination to a crisis. They resolved the issue and without any event in terms of damage to the pipeline or spillage.
Alyeska's Egan says the company is trying to eliminate the problem of wax pushed ahead of pigs triggering relief valves. She says it's done by overriding an automated detection system and manually listening for pigs.
In the medical field, you'd probably equate it to a stethoscope. You can put that up against the pipeline itself and hear the pig arrival.
Feinberg's report tracks missing pigs back to the year 2000, including a case where a pig broke apart inside a pipe. It lists the problem among several pipeline operational issues, he says, point to a common need.
Learning from near misses and other accidents so that you don't repeat mistakes.
Feinberg says the wax buildup that's requiring more pig runs is a problem that was anticipated before the pipeline began operation, and heating the oil is the obvious cure.
Speculatively, from the fact that they haven't installed the heat to do that, they don't want to spend the money.
Alyeska's Egan counters that the company is warming oil with friction by recirculating it through pipeline pump stations. She says lower pipeline throughput also means oil propelling cleaning pigs is moving more slowly, and that requires more of the mechanical devices to do the job. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The 112th Congress has officially ended, a Congress many are labeling the least effective and most disliked of all time. Representative Don Young swore in as a member of the 113th Congress today. This is Young's 21st term. APRN's Peter Granitz sat down with Young in his Capitol Hill office just after he was sworn in to talk about what Alaska can anticipate in the future. One of the things Young says he'll push in his next two-year term is the Indian Empowerment Act, designed to allow more use of Native land and resources for the benefit of Native people.
They have great potential, as I said before, and I'll keep pushing that. I believe I can get a lot of this done in the House, but again, with the Senate going to buy it, I don't know.
Is the future going to be passing smaller bills as opposed to giant sweeping pieces of legislation, which could happen as the chair?
Let's say smaller bills all add up. Just like the other day, I got my Malik bill, the Nome bill, the association got that done. That's something I've been working on for a period of time and passed it out of the House and give the Senate delegation credit. both Mark and Lisa, they put it into the package we had at Extenders. So I'll continue to do those type things, trying to work to solve problems for individual. And again, as a representative, my main challenges are going to become from request of Alaskans. Park restrictions, I'll be constantly working on that type thing again.
What about Anwar?
Well, Anwar was going to be introduced. I got a bill, H.R. 49 again. It was introduced today. I got the number, reserved the number, and we'll keep pushing it, and we'll pass it again. And again, and, you know, something happens, it probably won't become a reality with this president.
How many more terms?
As long as I feel good physically. Everybody knows Don Young. They know where Alaska is, and it very rarely will they do harm legislatively to Alaska. They do it through regulatory actions, that type of thing.
What do you think goes through your mind the day you surpass Ted Stevens as the longest-running Alaskan official ever?
I never even thought about it today. You just brought it up. When I look at this, I would like to serve selfishly until I can be dean of the House, where John Dingell got up and swore in the speaker. I'd like to do that one time. Unfortunately or fortunately, depends whichever way you look at it, the only way that can happen is John Dingell, Charlie Rangel, and John Conyers and Bill Young all die, or they don't run. I'm fifth now in the House, and we're all approximately the same age. I think I'm in better shape than any of them. But, you know, I'd like to be the dean, and I make no bones about that. I think that would be an honor for myself and for an honor for the state to be able to be the dean of the House.
Is there a role for you to counsel these new members and say there's a way to go about doing things and there's a way to not do things?
You can't build a house out of soft concrete. You have to have gravel put into it to make it stick together. And right now our concrete is pretty well made up of mush. And there's numerous reasons for that. And, you know, you got a group of ideologues that got elected on one thing and not understanding, and I've said this many times, that if you take little bites of the apple, you'll eventually eat the apple. The big goal here is to make sure that we retain the majority in 2014 until 2016.
You've worked with Democrats before.
All
you represent the old school politician who cuts deals, who works and creates relationships. That doesn't seem to be the new breed here.
Well, both sides. The other side won't work with our side. And it reminds me of two bullies in the yard trying to beat up somebody on both sides, bully and bully. But in the meantime, the people, the American people, are getting hurt. I work with everybody to solve problems. I always have. And that's been one of my, if you want to call it a legacy, they'll tell you that. I often brag about the highway bill, but Jim Oberstar and I never had an adversarial vote in the committee because we would sit down in a room and beat one another up real bad, staffs included. And then we'd finally come out with a position, and both sides would accept it.
That was Congressman Don Young speaking with APRN's Peter Granitz in Washington, D.C.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give, or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
It's official. Petersburg is now a borough. The state's Division of Elections certified the town's borough vote today. The final results did not change from the initial counts in December. The now official tally is 782 votes in favor and 600 opposed. The certification marks the official beginning of the Petersburg Borough, a new municipality encompassing 3,829 square miles of land and water in central southeast Alaska. Brent Williams, a local government specialist with the state's Local Boundary Commission, says all the requirements have been met.
The city of Petersburg is dissolved and the borough is formed. There's no other announcement. It has been those two things that were required have been done.
those last two requirements were approval by the voters and by the federal government.
The Department of Justice had to notify us that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 has been complied with, and we received such a letter. The second thing is that certification had to be approved of the legally required voter approval of the Commission's final decision from the Director of Elections, and we did receive notification from Elections that the results have been certified.
The Local Boundary Commission decided last summer that Petersburg's petition for a new borough met state standards, although the commission approved a different northern boundary than originally sought by Petersburg. The city and borough of Juneau submitted a petition seeking to annex some of the territory on the northern end of Petersburg's proposed borough and has appealed the Boundary Commission's decision in court. That case is still pending. Petersburg is the 19th organized borough in the state of Alaska, and the first meeting of the Petersburg Borough Assembly is Monday, January 7th. A college professor who studies food systems is putting his money where his brain is. Nick Mink has spent the past two summers in Sitka meeting fishermen and learning about the economy of salmon trolling. Now he's launched a business to connect individual boats with consumers in the Midwest. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Fresher fish from Alaska direct to your dinner plate thanks to a new and growing Galesburg company. Here's News 8's Jonathan Katz.
Near Sitka, Alaska, fishing salmon out of the water is very common.
You know your business is on the map when you make the local television news in the Quad Cities. Nick Mink is a sustainable foods fellow at Butler University. He says he started Sitka Salmon Shares trying to answer a question many of us have asked.
Why does this salmon taste so good here and taste so bad down in the Midwest?
Mink first came to Sitka in the summer of 2010 with his girlfriend, who had a full-time job here. He rented an office on the Sheldon Jackson campus to finish his dissertation. Then he received an appointment in the Environmental Studies Department at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. Besides the college, Galesburg has a sustainable business incubator, and it could not be better situated.
Galesburg is this perfectly centrally located place, just about 3 hours from everywhere in the Midwest. And so when you start thinking about developing markets in Chicago and Indianapolis and St. Louis and Des Moines and Iowa City and Madison, Wisconsin and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Galesburg acts as kind of the center of the salmon solar system that we plan to set up with our Sitka fish.
For 3 months last summer, Mink and seven employees packed and delivered frozen salmon in 5, 8, and 12-pound boxes to 350 clients in the Midwest. The coho and king salmon was provided by two boats in Sitka. The sockeye came from three Juneau fishing businesses, and Seafood Producers Cooperative in Sitka supplied whatever inventory the others couldn't.
The idea appealed to me. The product appealed to me.
Cindy Sievert is a librarian at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She saw an ad for Sitka Salmon Shares last summer in a small arts and culture magazine.
My husband and I have a garden, and he's a hunter, and we love good food. And we priced it out and figured out that it was about the same price that we'd pay for a really good salmon here in town, and I thought, might as well try it.
Sievert says she and her husband both already love salmon, which made the decision to become a member that much easier. She also understands the idea behind CSAs, community-supported agriculture, even though her garden makes joining a CSA unnecessary. Sitka Salmon Shares is a type of community-supported fishery. Sievert says knowing who caught the fish, how it was caught and cared for, were all as important in her decision to buy in as making a healthy eating choice. Now, even though she lives 3,000 miles from Sitka, she's starting to sound like a local.
And it's been fun having a freezer full of salmon. Oh, we'll have salmon tonight and tomorrow and the next day.
One factor Sievert did not roll into her decision was the sustainability of having frozen fish flown from Sitka to Chicago, trucked to Galesburg, and then hand-delivered to her door in Madison. Nick Mink, however, thinks about this a lot. He knows using fossil fuels is not a perfect system.
Part of our power at the Sustainable Business Center comes from solar and is renewable. So that, on the one hand, helps. We also pay to offset all of the carbon emissions for the salmon that come into Illinois. And we actually take that money and we invest it into wind energy in the Midwest. And so that's kind of one little element of making the system, we believe, a little bit more sustainable.
Sitka Salmon Shares also invests 1% of its proceeds back into salmon habitat restoration and salmon education. He thinks the money should be enough to support 2 summer internships for college students back in Sitka. Although this is the only place where students fit into the business model, it's not hard to look at Sitka Salmon Shares as an academic exercise that has taken on a life of its own. Professor Mink is walking the walk.
If I'm going to teach it and I want students to go out there and do it, well, this offered me a cool chance to be able to try it myself and to learn lessons that I could then pass on to students.
As a seasonal business, most of Mink's 7 employees last summer were students. This summer, he's hoping to hire 11 or 12 as Sitka Salmon Shares expands into a 5-month season with the addition of longliners supplying halibut and black cod. Every box of fish contains recipes, and Mink has organized cooking classes with local chefs for up to 35 of his members at a time. Mink is getting a lot of press. Sitka Salmon Shares was featured in the online version of Forbes magazine last month, and the TV time doesn't hurt either.
And consumers keep more money in their pockets. It takes just 5 days to get the fish
still,
off the dock.
Name recognition is not quite where Mink would like it to be just yet.
The funny thing is, a lot of people come up to me and they say, Sitka, your dog?
The business will grow.
Reporting in Sitka, the town, I'm Robert Woolsey.
In Galesburg, Jonathan Katz, WQAD HD, News 8.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059. And by the Quality Inn and Suites on Spinard, providing lodging for Medicare patients in Anchorage with a 24-hour airport shuttle and a hot continental breakfast. Reservations at 800-221-7550. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.